It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland and Daniel Pryor today on the, I think about the third edition of our Sound Mind broadcast. Daniel Pryor, a counselor and coach. And good afternoon,
Hello, Mr. Pryor.
Hey, we're going to get right into a subject this week that you wanted to kind of give your synopsis of what it means to be a coach and a counselor. And that you were saying that sometimes they seem the same, but they're really not.
Yeah, last time we had talked, and actually you'd raised the question, and I don't know if I did a good job of answering that. And so I thought I would kind of sharpen the point a bit here. And a lot of times counseling, I think quite often people go into counseling and they're focused on their problem. And they want to talk about, or they think they're going to talk about, you know, what is my problem? What do you call it? What's the diagnosis? What's the prognosis? And that
look it up in the book and give it a label.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then there are other people who, whether they actually call it counseling or not, they tend to be more solution focused. And, you know, they're going to hope they can go and talk to somebody about how do I get out of where I'm at, whatever it is.
How do I lose 30 pounds by the
week?
Yeah,
right. Something like that.
Right.
And that's actually more of a coaching thing. You know, I could probably just think of, you know, your basketball coach or your tennis coach or your speech coach or your youth director coach or whatever. It's a person who they don't really focus on the problem per se, but they focus more on where you're going, the goal setting, goal orientation. Mm-hmm. How do you get there? What's the best way to get there? There are coaching programs, and I think when a lot of times people think of the kind of the popularized coaching idea of Robinson or that sort of a thing, where for people with deep pockets who can afford to go out on expensive training programs and that. So you don't need deep pockets to get coached by me. Mm. And the coaching that I do is kind of within the context of the kinds of needs that I typically see in people that come, you know. So people can be, you know, coached for different things since you were, you know.
Well, like, for instance, what would be something? So would you coach somebody on how to lose weight?
Well,
or get in shape or whatever?
Insofar as overeating or any kind of behavior that's overindulgent is shame and fear-based, then, it really does have a lot to do with what we talk about. And I take this opportunity to, Mark, to just speak to the people who are listening and saying, we are going to talk a bit about coaching today, but if you're going through some emotional pain or stress or some event in your life that's painful and hurtful and you think, I was hoping I could tune into the show and get some help, you will get some help because these things are all connected. So don't go away. We're talking about coaching, but it's life stuff, and that's what you're in. It's going to be about relationships and that kind of thing.
That's kind of the overall theme for today's show, too, is life perspectives. What do you mean by life perspectives?
Well, I started developing a model, Mark, some years ago, quite a number of years ago, in fact, many years ago, just observing how we go through life, why we go through life. If people who are familiar a bit with psychology may recall the name Abraham Maslow, and he had a hierarchy of motivational needs, which I think was excellent. And he explains that we are motivated through life to meet certain needs, and that makes perfect sense.
Sure.
You know, and so we. For example, first of all, food and water is our basic need, and until you have secured food and water, that's the first thing on your mind. And then we move to security needs, being safe, and then belonging needs, and then self-esteem needs, and finally what he called self-actualization. I was kind of on my own trail and actually didn't know a lot about Abraham Maslow's model, and I kind of was looking at the way my life experiences and those people I know and know closely, and you know how we go through life and what we're after and what the bottom line is on that. So I kind of came up with what turned out to be a very simplified model of what Abraham Maslow is talking about, and in some ways a very more practical model because it talks about what I'm doing, what my behaviors are, what my emotions are right now, and how those things can identify where I am in life and which direction I'm moving. So basically, I came up with, instead of five needs that we're pursuing, Three life perspectives. And so I wanted to talk about those three life perspectives. And what the life perspective model explains is where I am in life, why I'm there, and how I can move on. So it's kind of a really dynamic coaching tool.
Big questions. Yeah. That's kind of the why am I here? That's, I always hear that's like the number one question, isn't it?
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We either face that question or answer it without having asked it, if that makes any sense, you know, because we're always in pursuit of that.
Okay, then let's explain how this model works.
Yeah. First of all, we want to acknowledge the problem of immortality. I call it the problem immortality. At the bottom of all of our good and bad feelings is the question of security. And so if people, you know, just take a minute to think that through and let that sink in. At the bottom, whether it's a good feeling or a bad feeling, at the bottom of it is the need for security. So I have good feelings when things come about or thoughts come about that make me feel secure. And I have bad feelings when there are thoughts that make me feel insecure. Mm. Now, that's a very simplistic way of viewing it, but I like to boil things down to, you know, lowest common denominators. And so basically we are about feeling secure. So we're driven toward security. Now, let's think of security in some other terms, though, some terms that are kind of really more applicable in an immediate sense. And so I talk to people about value, control, and power. Value, control, and power as security. But let's talk about, what do I mean by value? Well, everybody wants to be valued. In the job, I want to feel that I have a part in the job, you know, in the family, a family within the church, family within the community, a player on a sports team. Everybody wants to feel valued. Everybody wants to feel their own control, not control of other people, but control of me.
Sure.
We don't care to control other people, but everybody wants to be able to control their own decisions and their own direction in life.
Sure.
And then the third one is power. We could think of that as resources. I may have a choice to go to this school or join that team or buy that stock, but do I have the resources to do it? So we all, you know, so you can see right away that there's an overlap between value, control, and power. You can distinguish them, but not differentiate them. And so these are really the terms that are kind of synonymous with or interchangeable with security. I'm pursuing security, but what practically am I pursuing? Well, I'm pursuing a sense of value, a sense of control, and a sense of power.
Mm.
And so what the life perspectives model does is it says we have three perspectives through which we pursue value, control, and power. So one of the perspectives, and one of the perspectives would be what I call the immediate perspective. And in that perspective, I'm pursuing value, control, and power through immediate gratification.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the body perspective, excuse me. Body perspective, I'm pursuing value, control, and power through immediate gratification. If I want to move out from that perspective and I view life through a larger perspective, that is tends to be a perspective of pursuit of life, value, control, and power through acquisitions and achievements, which I call the external perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to keep up with the Joneses, you know, trying to have a better lifestyle, better education, better job, better car, better suit, better friends, acquisitions and achievements give me that sense of value, control, and power. And then thirdly, and this is, I think, what we aspire to. This is what Maslow would call self-actualization, but I don't think that Maslow ever maybe didn't realize. I never saw in his writings where he realized that self-actualization is no longer about me, but it's about other people.
Hmm. Interesting.
And so what we aspire to, whether we realize it or not, is a sense of or a pursuit of value, control, and power, such that it's actually a pursuit of surrender.
Hmm.
And there's a realization there that it's not about me; it's about other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not then difficult to make that connection with, well, that is a very spiritual way to look at life and a very biblical way to look at life, you know.
Yeah.
Love for God and love for your fellow man is fulfilling the law, you know.
Yeah.
And better to give than to receive. And so there are a lot of things that come with that third larger perspective. But it's not some place that we go and stay, you know. It's always a place that I remind myself, that's where I wanted to be. You know, today I wanted life to be about other people, not about myself. Mm. And so it's always something that we aspire to. And that's,
Do you think that the first one you mentioned, the immediate, is that kind of the more base stuff that we're always trying to work on, and kind of more self-control issues with their immediate gratification? Because this culture is such a, this impulsive, people's impulses are just out of control, it seems like.
Yeah, well, one of the things that the model explains is how that our life is either getting, or our world perspective or our life perspective is either getting smaller or larger. I'd say your world is getting smaller or larger. So if I'm moving toward that smaller immediate gratification, you can see that my world is getting smaller to the place where pretty soon it's just about me and there's no room for anyone else. Right. And so you could say, well, what would a person's behaviors be like if their life was all about them and no one else? Well, they would be addictive behaviors.
Yeah.
Self-gratification, immediate gratification. So now you see all kinds of behaviors that we find all around us, you know, indulgences in lots of behaviors that are self-destructive.
Yeah. That destroy their lives, and people know it. They know they're out of control, and this base level one immediate gratification is ruining their life. And that is, quite honestly, one of the main reasons they first call someone like you, is they've got a problem with the, I know I've got trouble because I'm immediately gratifying everything. So
And so the coaching part would be, teaching you how to enlarge your world. And so that would involve goal orientation, setting goals, pursuing goals. And that, again, is not ultimately where we want to be, but it's the next step, you know, to come out of any kind of addiction or any kind of a behavior, self-destructive behavior that's all about me and not about other people. I have to start moving out, and so I have to start setting some meaningful goals.
Well, this is challenging stuff, and we are talking with Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. And your website, again, Daniel, is BibleBasedCounselor.com. And a lot of your writings, too. Why don't you mention that website that has a lot of your articles on it?
ChristianCounselorsForum.com. As a matter of fact, I've got an article up there now on the purpose of marriage, the purpose and process of marriage. I guess it's actually the purpose of marriage, ontologically speaking. So is the name of the main name of the article. But good thing. And then it references a couple of articles in there, one that I talked about last week on trust, forgiveness, and communion. Mm-hmm. And another one on the debate of marriage, which is a little more informational about what's the debate of marriage really all about. So there are a couple of several good articles right there at the what's called the current article.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get back to more of Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
As well as Mark Holland, helping Daniel Pryor get across his wonderful counseling and coaching ideas. And you're quite a deep thinker, I can tell, Daniel.
I don't know how to respond to that. Yeah. Sometimes, do I get myself underwater sometimes?
No, I think it's really refreshing that you really thought through these things, taken a lot of classical counseling models, but also looking for their biblical reference and biblical foundation, which I think is just very refreshing. We're talking about life perspectives this week, and you made the provocative statement of the problem of immortality. Mm-hmm. Now, I would never think that immortality is a problem, but it does create some... It does create some predicaments, you say, about the whole idea of security as being one of our issues.
I guess you could turn it around and say the problem of mortality.
Of mortality.
But the problem of immortality is that somehow there's a sense in us, unlike lower animals, there's a sense in us that there's something greater. There's an interesting verse in Genesis that says, in the days of Enoch, man first began to invoke or call on the name of Yahweh.
Hmm.
And I thought it was interesting that Enoch means mortal and Yahweh means eternal. Hmm. And there's a way in our thinking, it's a basic principle of cognitive thinking, that we can't be aware of something unless it's contrasted against something different. So the realization of mortality comes along with the realization of immortality.
Yeah.
They define each the other. Mm-hmm. So if mortality is a problem, it's also that immortality is a problem. So it's the same problem. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do in our life, when we talk about security, why are we driven towards security? And the reason I started off with security is that, you know, immortality is kind of a reach for people. But when we start thinking about security, what is security for us? It can happen at different levels. Lower animals don't think about immortality and I wonder if I'm going to die tomorrow or
I don't care if I have forever. What's called eternal security.
Yeah. Yeah. Their security is food, right. Water, security, you know, shelter, right. That sort of thing. You know, I would say like a lion doesn't go to sleep at night thinking, I hope I have some rabbits tomorrow. Right. It just, if he's hungry, he gets up and hunts, or she gets up and hunts right. Then. And if they could think that far ahead, you'd probably find lions farming rabbits and raising rabbits so that there'd be food, you know, for, you know, generations to come.
Right.
Human beings have that ability to think ahead. And so there's this kind of foreboding thing out there. Mm. There's that moment of death and then, you know, what is beyond? And that's a wonderment. It's part of our awareness of ourself and awareness of others. Again, those spatial counterparts are part of the same. Mm. So the problem of mortality is that that's what basically drives our fears. That's what basically drives our shame, which we get to when we talk about value, control, and power. And so we talked about anger last week, and we had this definition of anger is a fear-based defense mechanism associated with the gain or loss of value, control, and power. So this movement through life perspectives is associated with anger a lot of times until we get to that place where we realize it's not about me anymore. It's about other people. It's about God. It's about someone else. Then it's surrender and it's humility instead of, ego and self-protection, those kinds of things. So does that explain the problem of immortality or mortality anymore?
Again, like I said, you've brought up this question several times already in some of our discussions, and I had never thought about it that way, but I think you're really on to something with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The existentialist would say we have two fears and two needs, but they can be boiled down to just this one thing, you know, the problem of mortality and immortality. The two fears are fear of isolation and the fear of death. And if you think those through, you'll think those are very much the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then the two needs are the need of freedom and the need of choice. And those are very much the same thing. And they're just the antithesis of death.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just basically a life and death issue, surprisingly, that drives all these emotional things that people come to get counseling about. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are questions out there that we can't answer. But it's enough to know that you can move from one perspective to another perspective. Your world can get larger. And then there are some very practical ways that I can show that our world does get larger. We can focus on, we can find ourselves on this in this model. I can look at my emotions. What are my emotions, you know? And those emotions can tell me you're either in this small world perspective where it's all about you, life perspective where it's all about you, or you're in this life perspective where it's sort of still about me, but there are other people in this perspective. It's just that they're competition. Mm-hmm. Everybody's competition. And or am I at last, you know, briefly in that place where other people aren't competition, they're brothers, they're sisters, they're, you know, and your life is centered on those other people.
Well, getting that kind of balance is what seems to bring a lot of peace of mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, this whole idea you said of the ultimate is a sense of surrender, humility, serenity. I hear a mm-hmm. lot too, mm-hmm. people who have a serene. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what we're all looking for.
And it's described by the fruits of the Spirit.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't trying to be overly biblical when I developed this, but when I started contemplating what a life is like when it's a surrendered life, And I started just thinking of, you know, adjectives and, you know, what kind of a life would it be? And it would be life of, or nouns, I guess it would be joy. Yeah, joy. Love? Sure, certainly love. How about peace? Oh, yeah, yeah. Long-suffering, patience. With, oh, yeah, 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 those do.
Those are all
meekness. Yeah.
Fruits of the Spirit. There you go.
So,
well, I love that verse in the Bible, too. It says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And a sense of humility about yourself and about the world, that, again, is just the ultimate kind of goal that we're all looking for.
Yeah. So I wanted to try to put some feet on this in this segment, and then we might have to roll this over into the next show, which would be fine. But let's talk about fear and shame. And I need to, it's going to sound like we're making a jump here, but we'll connect the dots here in a second. So fear and shame are at the really the basis of the two of all the emotion and all the things that people come to counseling for. And remember that when people come to counseling, whether we realize it or not, we're trying to move through life. We're trying to have a different life perspective. We're trying to change the way we view life and the way we feel about life. So it's a movement through this model to a larger life perspective. Well, the thing that is in the way of that, and the thing that's kind of motivating us and driving us toward value, control, and power, the alternative of value, feeling valued, having control, feeling like I have power, resources, is fear and shame. Fear of what? Fear of loss of value, control, and power, but more fundamentally, fear of mortality, fear of insecurity, shame. Shame is a difficult one for people to really wrap their mind around, because we tend to think of things that we're ashamed. We did something and now I'm ashamed of that. But shame is more basic than that. Shame is really a reason why I do shameful things, because I start off with a message, an internalized message of lack of worth.
Right.
And then I live down to that message. And so shame is really something that came before the shameful acts. And then there's the secondary shame. I'm ashamed of things that I feel guilty about.
Right.
But getting rid of the basic shame is something that is very difficult. I don't, just like fear is attached to our mortality, so we'll always have that, shame is somehow attached to our mortality. I think I would explain it this way. If doing successful things in life could make me get rid of the shame, accomplishing things could make me get rid of the shame, that would be well and good, but it doesn't seem to work that way. It's like being the best player on a team. And you say, okay, well, that would be something to feel good about. I wouldn't be ashamed if I was the best player on the team.
Right.
But ultimately, at some point, you'd begin to look around and say, well, there are other teams. And what if I'm the best player on a team that hasn't won a game for 15 years? You know, so there's another level of value. I mean, what is the value of a team? You know, this is my team. I'm on the team. I'm the best player on the team. I'm proud of that, but I'm ashamed of the fact that our team has never. So human beings, within the context of my life, I might be the best of something, the big fish in the small pond, so to speak. But we're smart enough to know that there's something beyond this life, and that there's a judge that's higher, that there's a standard that's higher. And so David asks, what is man that you're mindful of him? So shame is at that level. It's not just shame of myself. There's a deeper shame, it seems to be, that has just kind of been in the drinking water. I'm ashamed because my dad was ashamed. He's ashamed.
Well, do you think that shame is ultimately just that I know I'm a sinner?
It could be something like that.
Something as basic as that?
Yeah, it could be something like that. It certainly, I think, has to do with that question, what is man? Because we have an awareness that we live our lives in view of a high and holy observer. I think that, you know, that goes along with the line that given to every man a measure of faith. And there's an awareness in that Enoch is aware of his mortality. He's also aware of an immortal, an eternal. So I think that shame is anchored there.
Well, can you explain real quickly again the difference between shame and guilt? Because those are kind of different, aren't they? I mean, guilt is kind of more, I did something bad, and shame is more, I am bad.
Yeah,
right? Isn't that kind of...
They do kind of get mixed up there.
Because guilt, I think guilt is okay, isn't it? If you've really done something bad, you should be guilty, shouldn't you?
Yeah, you can look at, I think you can look at guilt. I think the feeling of guilt is shame.
Okay.
Okay. The feeling of guilt is shame. So I think we kind of mix those two up.
Yeah.
we talk about feeling guilty, but what we're really feeling is shame. So I think the feeling of knowing that I'm guilty of something, the feeling of that is shame. To some extent. And I can go back and take care of that guilty act, but somehow, why did I do that? Well, I was living down to a message of lack of worth somehow. So I was living down to a lower message of shame.
Well, this is really interesting. Life Perspectives this week on Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor. It's so interesting how you say shame. I've heard that too in counseling. I've gone to some counseling and stuff too, and different things in my life. And they do always get back to this area of shame in our life is what drives, you know, behaviors that you know are wrong and that you want help for. So, if people want to come to you for counseling, now you have offices in Edmonds.
Bellevue and Edmonds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're not only a counselor, but you're also a life coach. Mm-hmm. And we'll probably continue to develop what the difference is between those things on future broadcasts. We just kind of scratch the surface of this subject. Seems like a big one.
Yeah.
We'll have to continue this on our next show.
That's right. We will.
And for more details as well, your website is BibleBasedCounselor.com. And also to read some of the really interesting articles from Daniel, you can go to ChristianCounselorsForum.com. And thank you so much, Daniel, for talking with us today.
Good to be here again.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.